Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the
Good morning, listeners from not-so-sunny Queensland today. Welcome to this episode of Mind Your Feet, and thank you all for listening. Now, listeners, if you would like to call in with any questions, you can do so on 646 716 7979. Now, today I'm very fortunate to have as my guest Debbie Rossi, and Debbie and I are going to be talking about all things mindfulness again, and we're also going to be talking about a really interesting topic, which is around retraining the brain. And before I have Debbie talk with us, I have a really good example of when it's really important to be minding your feet. So in the last few days, I've become increasingly frustrated about the fact that certain things that I needed to do haven't been falling into place. And a couple of our listeners have actually connected with me on Facebook. So thank you, Tim Ball and Colin Hullen, for actually reminding me that it might be a really good idea if I were to actually practice what I preach and mind my feet. Because when we get really caught up in what we're doing and all of the stuff that's going on in life and things are not happening the way we expect or want them to happen, the very first thing that we do is to forget to be in the present moment. And I've been doing a whole lot of that lately, particularly around the area to do with my book and the delivery of my book and so forth. And it occurred to me just as I was sitting having some quiet time before the show that it was probably a really good lesson that if I was going to write a book about mindfulness and minding your feet and being in the moment and making choices from the moment, that I remember to practice that so that I'm actually could be right where I'm suggesting to you all is a good place to be. So without further ado, I'm going to welcome Debbie. So Debbie, welcome to our show and thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest with me today.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you.
And I'm excited to have you here too because you're bringing a really interesting combination of skills to the show, and we haven't yet had a kinesiologist talking to us. So thank you for bringing those skills, and I'm really intrigued to hear how you came to a combination of mindfulness and kinesiology.
Well, I suppose, a bit like you, how you were just mentioning in the introduction, living our own life and having obstacles and dramas coming up in our own life, and then us having to deal with them on a personal level to be able to then help people around us, whether it be one-on-one or on a bigger level. But I think that's really how I got into more of the mindfulness with the kinesiology, just by seeing how much of a difference it was actually making in my life. Well, first of all, with the kinesiology, I got into that because I could see the benefits of it, and I really felt the differences in my life and I needed to study it. But then the mindfulness goes so well with it because a kinesiology session can only last so long, but it's that stuff, that the things that you do in your daily life that makes a difference and makes those changes longer lasting than what a session can be. So it's just... It's so important, and I think that everybody should be practicing mindfulness. And with the brain, retraining the brain, it's another level because ultimately it's all about the brain, which is sometimes it's a muscle in our body that we actually forget that we have, and we don't actually utilize it and use it as best we can, like we do with any other muscle, going to the gym or doing stretches, going in for massages and things like that. So it's just retraining the brain away from different self-beliefs or patterns of behavior, whether it be, you know, a parental pattern or a society pattern or even a pattern that we've put upon ourselves, just retraining the brain to think in a different way and to react and behave in a different way, which is really quite powerful and brings in that mindfulness even further to then allow you to be more in the moment with ease as you're training the brain to do that.
It is a real, I agree, it is a real retraining process, because our first instinct, and increasingly because we've got so much access to technology, our first instinct is always to be somewhere else, isn't it? It's really what happened yesterday or in the past or what might happen. And those are the two places that we go to initially every time we try and make a decision, rather than if we've become used to being more aware of mindfulness, we can at least ground ourselves a little bit and be in the moment before we start to make those choices.
Exactly,
Go on.
I was just going to say, and that's exactly what it's about. You know, it's an automatic, our brain goes on automatic pilot to rethink what's happened in the past. And we often have many, many examples of, you know, sometimes a negative example of things that happened in the past to, you know, the self-beliefs and the negative self-talk that we have. And they just go on automatic pilot when we're confronted with something in the present moment to deal with, whether it be, you know, a negative or a positive moment. But it's actually just seeing that and seeing that it is just your brain on automatic pilot going backwards, but it's bringing it into the now and moving forward with more of a positive mindset and more of a mindful mindset as well.
Absolutely. I was mentioning just at the start of the show that this last few days I've allowed myself effectively to be a three-year-old, quite spectacularly three-year-old, I must say. Pretty much not much short of being, you know, lying on the floor in the supermarket and you know, bashing my fists into the floor, just simply because of the frustrations of trying to get some things done that seem to be taking forever. And it's amazing, isn't it, just how many old ideas about what we ought to do or should be or so forth will hop up and down inside us. And they really do take away our power, because they take away our ability to be happy or even just to completely observe what's going on for us.
Yep, I keep interrupting you. And the thing is, the brain doesn't know whether we're thinking about a past event or thinking about a current event. It just knows that it's thinking about it, so it's reliving it physiologically as well as mentally and emotionally. It's just reliving it. It doesn't understand. You know, it's just whatever we're thinking is what we're telling the brain to do and how to react. And hence we become more, you know, that inner child in ourselves comes out more and we stamp our foot down and say, no, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, it sure is. So tell me a little bit more about how you came to kinesiology, because I'm always fascinated, first of all, about how people make these choices of what they, you know, what becomes your passion. Because from hearing you speak, I can hear that you are very much passionate about kinesiology and also on purpose in the work that you're doing.
Definitely. Well, I started studying kinesiology almost 10 years ago now, and I got into it originally because my daughter at the time, she was only 4, and she was suffering from continual headaches, and I tried everything, and I was never one much for giving her, you know, Panadol and Nurofen and things like that. So I would try everything, but she was at the point where she would be vomiting and things like that. So I tried the doctors, but to not much luck. And then I also, one of my friends said to me, oh, well, I see a kinesiologist, why don't you try her? And I thought, I didn't even know how to pronounce the word, let alone know what it was. And I just went along blind.
Mm-hmm.
And in that session, in that hour session, she said to me that it was dairy that was causing the headaches, and to eliminate dairy from her diet. And as a new mum, I was like, no, what do you mean? They need to have dairy for their bones. They need this, you know, they have it 4 times a day at least. So it was basically, I went away a bit skeptical, but I took her advice. I took dairy out of her diet, and she became headache free, and it was the dairy. But nowhere else that I went to, as many different modalities that I had tried, could ever actually explain that to me or find that about her through the muscle testing. And once that was it, I was hooked, because then I just needed to learn everything to be able to, it was really in the beginning, to be able to help her and help her deal and help improve her bodily functions, But then I just got so involved in it. And then as with any sort of study that we do, it sort of takes you on a very personal journey to end up dealing with all of your own inner things that are going on. And then it's actually becomes more of a personal thing as opposed to someone on the outside. So it was really, really fantastic for me as a person, my kinesiology study. And I just love it. I use it every day.
So at what point did you decide that you were going to introduce mindfulness into the mix?
Well, mindfulness is something that I've actually been doing, and I actually run meditation classes and things like that. But what it is, it's actually probably I really got into more mindfulness probably maybe 3-4 years ago when I started studying meditation and doing regular meditation classes and personal development classes as well through that. And what it actually... It just showed me a whole other level because, yes, you can know these things logically and even emotionally at times, but if you don't integrate it spiritually and integrate it into that moment, then it doesn't actually stick. It doesn't actually stay with you. But it's every day that we're actually living and every day that we're doing things that we're confronted with different dramas or different situations that we're going through that we need to have that grounding. And I just find that it's just so powerful to be able to teach people that and to do that, to be actually to... to show them how they can make a change in their every moment of their life just by being in the moment. But so I just find it so powerful. Yeah, I hope I explained that correctly. But yeah,
I certainly am aware of that. I first started my journey into mindfulness with the School of Philosophy. So I had an opportunity when I was working away at. Over in Western Australia in the resource sector. I was living in Perth and didn't know many people, so I decided I would do a course. Interesting enough, I had set out with the intention that I would study kinesiology and couldn't at the time find a kinesiology course that I could get into. However, I did keep seeing the School of Philosophy pop up, and so I took myself along to find out more about that. And first of all, with the practice of mindfulness, so being in the moment, and then in subsequent years, I've become involved with the Transcendental Meditation and initiated into meditation. One of the things that I've noticed through the time, and initially I was extremely sceptical because, hey, I was working in mining and we had things to do and what would you want to have all this mindful stuff for? But the first thing that I realised was that it was, I at the time had a very difficult work situation, and I found that being able to take that time, morning and evening initially, to be to practice being mindful certainly assisted in my ability to manage the situations around me, because what I started to realise was that I could observe them rather than hop into and be completely caught up with them. So rather than practising my 3-year-old, as I was this last couple of days, I was gradually able to observe what was going on and then use my other skills to manage situations based on the fact that I could actually see what was going on without hopping into it. And I think that for me was one of the first indicators of just how powerful it can be. And the other one that I've noticed more and more is that as a naturally light sleeper, where the body isn't necessarily getting the rejuvenation that it might otherwise need, that the mindfulness and meditation do provide a top-up of energy, and it's a really lovely strong energy rather than that really frantic energy that might come from overdosing on too much coffee or sugar or other of those kinds of things that we can also choose to do to our bodies. So I would imagine too that in the context of working with your clients, you would find that teaching them some of these skills also helps with other issues that are presenting in the body. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I mean, I use kinesiology in quite an emotional space because I am a qualified counsellor. But I do actually see mindfulness help, obviously, with the emotion side of it, but also on the physical side of it as well. Because, I mean, ultimately, if we continue... I was actually listening to a TED talk just last week, and it actually explained it really well. And if we actually continue to tell our body, say, for instance, if I don't know, say if we've got a lower back pain, and if we continually tell our mind, oh, my back's sore, my back's sore, my back's sore, you're reinforcing and reminding the brain of that. So you're continually telling your body, remember you've got a sore back, remember you've got a sore back, remember you've got a sore back. But if you come what you're saying and what you're doing and just being in the moment and actually just, you know, rather than focusing on a pain or something negative in your life, just focusing on more of the breath or more of a calming space, then it actually helps with the physical ailments as well, because it takes your mind out of that painful or that stressful space, whether emotional, physical, or a work-based stress or whatever it is. It actually just brings you away from that. And then, like you said as well, Helen, it's about, you know, reminding you that, you know, it's not that big a deal, you know, or the emotion doesn't build up. It's allowing you to see the bigger picture of what's actually going on, which is so, so powerful, and it does amazing things.
It really does. I was fortunate enough to teach some mindfulness practice to a very dear friend of mine who was in the process of passing away. And in those last few weeks of her life, we were able to teach her to practice being in the moment. And it was an amazing and rewarding experience, because she was reporting that it lessened the fear, because and allowed for an acceptance, but it also there wasn't the awareness of the pain, because the focus was on the moment and be, as you say, breathing, being in the moment, being able to acknowledge that whatever was happening to the physical body wasn't necessarily happening to the spirit and to the self. And so it was a really lovely And very humbling experience to be a part of at the time. But I've also seen it being used. It is, yeah. And I've also seen it being used more and more with children. And I know that you have 4 children, so you've had a good opportunity to practice either for your own sanity or also for theirs.
Yes. Well, and I also go into different schools and do some of the brain exercises, and I run some teenage meditation classes as well. But the stresses and the things, I mean, our children these days are growing up in such, you mentioned earlier about, you know, computers and things like that, and such a fast-paced, need-it-now sort of environment. You know, they need it now. They need it, you know, done. There's no waiting. There's no, you know, it's that instant gratification almost. So with mindfulness and meditations, because I do encourage and get my children to do regular meditations with, you know, just on an app on their phone, because sometimes they don't like mum doing it. And they'll actually go through, and they'll go through, and, you know, it's just bringing them and calming their minds as well, because they are so overstimulated, and calming their bodies and just allowing them to see that, you know, it's not that, not to be so reliant on outside things, you know, social media and things like that. My eldest daughter is quite addicted to it, you know, allowing her to see that, you know, it's just... it's not the be all and end all. It's more the internal, and it's more, you know, taking time out for yourself and having that calmness inside. So then you can then deal with all of these things that are going on the outside, you know, studying and school, friends, issues, and everything else, you know, and plus growing up and dealing with all their different hormone changes and everything. So it's really important to bring them back to that space of a calm. Because, I mean, you know yourself anyway, Helen, you know, like you said earlier, you know, the last couple of days you've been feeling quite frazzled. So you've had all of these dramas come at you about your book and things like that, and things not going the right way. But when you're in a calmer space, things tend to flow easier and they happen more with ease because you're more at ease from within.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what I try and teach them. Yeah,
it's all about inner resilience, and resilience is such an important thing, and it just actually, it can't come from outside. It has to come from inside. And one of the things I've noticed too, that with children who have any kind of behavioural issues, often my observation is that they've got a bigger pendulum swinging backwards and forwards inside them than maybe whatever average is supposed to be. And that pendulum tends to send them into greater activity or lesser activity much more rapidly than other children around them or other adults around them. And that practicing mindfulness is actually a really good way of starting to regulate that pendulum so that they have a greater sense of, as you say, the flow of the world and also the balance of the world.
Yep, definitely.
And that is quite a big thing, I think, also for many adults. And as you mentioned, the children and teenagers, as they go through that process of the hormonal changes and so forth, one of the things that I am seeing more and more is that as children of younger and younger ages are doing comparisons of how their well-being is in comparison to their friends and colleagues and the other kids in their classes. And that concerns me a little bit because that's definitely not about being, you know, living a childhood and being in the moment. And it sets us up as adults for increasing battles, if you like, with anxiety and panic and overwhelm because there's all of this constant comparison of other people seem to be doing it differently. We alluded to my book a few times here. It's one of the messages that was running. Well, why can other people get their books published quickly and not mine? And, you know, if I take the time to be mindful and step back, there's a very good reason for it. There was a level of quality that I wanted to come through. There was a level of quirkiness that I wanted to come through. And to achieve that, I literally had to go through a process. Speaking to Michael, our producer, just before we came on air, he is also an author. He also can attest to the challenges that go with that process. And that's just one example of what we all deal with on a daily basis. And as you say, kids these days, they're growing up at such an exponential rate and being subjected to so much information that being able to develop an ability to have some space in amongst that is really, really important. So tell me, Debbie, tell us more about how we can retrain our brain, because I think mine is a really good candidate this week for being retrained.
Yes, well, I know all of our brains need a bit of fine-tuning every now and again. They're basically, they're a set of brain gym exercises, and they were set up originally by a man called Paul Dennison. He's in America, and there's probably maybe about 30-odd exercises in the whole array of them. And they use different pressure points around the body. They use different actual physical exercises to stimulate. It's a lot about stimulating the left and the right side of the brain as well, getting them to work together, because obviously the left side of the brain is more about the logic, the thinking, the reasoning side of the brain, and the right side is more about seeing the bigger picture and having that daydream and then intuition, and bringing them together, bringing both sides of the brain together is so important, because we don't want to be stuck in the logic or the reason, and we don't want to be stuck in the daydreaming and off with the fairies almost. We want to be more grounded. We need to have both sides working together and being in a space where they can work coherently and with ease, because it's all about with ease, I believe. You know, when we think something's too hard, then it will prove to be too hard. So it's all about with ease. And I say that a lot to people when I'm working with them. It's just with ease, always with ease. So if we were to do, if I was to, you know, just talk you through our brain gym exercise now, one of them is called cross crawling, and this is probably one of the most popular ones. And it's really good. I mean, obviously these exercises are fantastic for children, but they're also really fantastic for adults as well, in the sense that they, you know, like you said also, you know, your brain needs a little bit of tuning, and, you know, everybody's brain needs a bit of tuning and a bit of looking after, because often we do forget our brains. So cross-crawling is good for whole body coordination, and it's also really great for that left and right side of integration, which is really important, like I just said. So cross-crawling mm-hmm. is just literally marching on the spot. So if you imagine yourself standing up, and people listening in can actually probably do it as well. So if you imagine yourself standing up, standing up in the, you know, just in the one spot, just have a bit of space around you. And it's just marching. So it's using your opposite arm and your opposite leg at the same time. And you're crossing over to touch your elbow to your knee as you're marching. Okay, so basically that means that then you're crossing the midline of the body, which is important in integrating the left and right side of the brain. And you're marching mm-hmm. using the opposite arm, opposite leg, using the left, the right side of the brain at the same time. And sometimes, even though this sounds like quite an easy exercise, sometimes people can really quite struggle with it. And I have found mm-hmm. that, which is one of the reasons why I find that they're so fantastic. And this is a great one to actually see, because it's such a physical exercise. So say, for instance, if you were doing that at home now or in your office, if you're actually standing up doing the cross-crawling, and if you were to think of quite a stressful situation, maybe something about your book, like you were mentioning, Helen, or something that's going on that's quite stressful, you'll often notice that you struggle to do the cross crawling, like you'll lose, you won't be able to do it as easily as what you've been doing, because that's the brain has gone into disarray, it's gone into that fight or flight mode, and you can't think clearly. So it's such a powerful physical demonstration of the exercise and how your brain is affected through emotional problems and dramas that are happening in your real world. So, and then if that is to happen, then it's just to rethink, you know, to continue to keep moving, doing the motion of the cross crawling, opposite arm, opposite leg, as you're marching on the spot, while you're thinking of the stressful situation, and then start to bring in some more positive affirmations and positive thoughts around that to help you then to go back to ease with the cross crawling. So it's really interesting to actually see someone do that, and it does actually people can really struggle with it when they're under a stressful situation.
Well, I was having a little practice while you were talking.
Oh, good. Good. Excellent.
my coordination did improve as I actually allowed myself to really listen to what you were saying, which again is another way, listeners, for us to come into mindfulness, is by listening to the voice, focusing all our attention on the voice. And so as I did that, yes, I found that I actually got a whole lot more coordinated than I was to start with.
So that's a
very good example. And it's a great example for listeners to try that, maybe not while you're driving, but it would be good if you were to hop out of your car when you get home. And particularly it would be a really good one to do if you'd come home feeling really agitated after a horrible day at work.
Yep, definitely. Even for those, obviously when you spend a lot of time on the computer and things like that, having that little quick 30-minute or hour break, stand up and do a bit of cross-crawling for 30 seconds, you know, just to get the brain back integrated, have a glass of water and sit back down, and you'll notice that you'll be able to work through what you're doing much easier, because everything's just flowing and everything's just moving easier within the brain.
Yeah, sounds good. Can you give us another example?
Another example, which is something that we all tend to do instinctively, but we don't actually realise that we're doing it. You know, when you're in that stressful moment and you often put your hand on your forehead and go, oh, you know, what's going on? You know, it's almost that hand on the forehead of, oh, goodness me. Well, on the forehead are actually pressure points, okay? And now these pressure points actually access the emotional part of the brain. So when you put in your hand, so your flat hand, the palm of your hand, straight onto your forehead, you're actually accessing and stimulating these pressure points that access the emotional part of the brain. And this actually allows you to actually reduce the stress of a specific moment or a specific, you know, memory from the past or even an anxiety about the future. It actually relaxes that reflex in the emotional part of the brain and allows you to actually then think clearly in the moment. So if you're, you know, again, if you're under stress, you can probably do this one when you're driving, you know, just popping your, I mean, obviously with one hand on the wheel, but yeah, just popping your hand on your forehead and just taking mm-hmm. in a few deep breaths, and that will actually start to relax the emotional component or memory blocks or those pattern of behaviors and bring you more into the present moment. And just that feeling of having the hand on the forehead, accessing those pressure points, will start to calm down the moment. And we do, like I said, we often do it instinctively. You all often see someone in a moment of stress with their hand on their forehead, as in, you know, it's just an instinctive movement that we do.
Yes, absolutely, it is. And you see people rubbing their either rubbing their eyes or rubbing their forehead or rubbing their temples yes. when they're feeling really, really agitated or concerned about something quite frequently.
Yes.
I had a Skype call with some clients the other day, and there was quite a bit of discord in the group and that we were working with, and it was very interesting to see how many of the participants were actually doing exactly that, because there was somebody in their midst who was simply not getting what the conversation was about. So that's a really good one, even for other coaches to suggest, if they see a lot of emotion coming up as a way of allowing that process to... Because we don't want to suppress the emotion, do we? We want the... No. But we do want to have a shift in it and to allow it to be less extreme in the way it's presenting.
Yes, exactly, and move through the body with ease. We don't want it to get stuck anywhere. I mean, all emotions are important to feel, you know, even anger and sadness and things like that, because we need to feel the whole array of emotions, but it's when they get stuck somewhere and we get stuck, our minds get stuck in them, that's when that will cause problems and dramas in our life. So it's allowing it to move through the body with ease. And this helps that do that, because it actually allows it to move so it doesn't get stuck in that stress or stuck in that memory.
Yes, exactly. That's fantastic. Yep. So, Debbie, how do people, what sort of programs have you got available, and how do people find you?
Yep, well, I've actually got on my webpage, my webpage is debbierossi.com.au, and on my webpage, as a bit of an information sheet and an offer to the viewers today, I've actually got just an A4 sheet of these brain gym exercises, so the two that I've spoken about and two other ones that I love and I think are really important. I mean, all of them are really important, but these are my favourites. And I've got a sheet there. If you go onto my webpage, debbierossi.com.au/brain, BRAIN, then a little dash, then GYM, gym, that will come up with a sheet, and you can, a page where you put in your email address, and then I'll email you through a copy of these brain gym exercises. You can print them out, put them on the fridge, take a photo of it, have it on your phone, just so you can have it around you and just as a reminder, because the more often you do these things in everyday life, because again, it's everyday life, the more that when you are under these moments of stress, the more easier your brain will actually go back into more of this calmer space rather than back into a past pattern of the way that you've behaved. So there's that. That's just a little bit of an offer for people today. I do run some online programs through igniting your possibility around working with the brain, working with mindfulness, working with kinesiology, all things all put together for my clients as well, as well as doing one-on-one sessions, whether it be via Skype or face-to-face in my clinic. I obviously, as well, I run the meditation classes for adults and teenagers, but that's all on my webpage anyway, and it's got lots of information on there. So it's I try and make it quite a variety, so you know people can access it whether you know they're looking for a brain exercise or meditation or there's lots of information there and lots of blogs and things like that.
That's fantastic, because I think the thing that I'm most finding from people is that there was originally the expectation that to be able to be mindful, to be live in the moment, that you had to sit still and do something for a long period of time, and that it was that there was some sort of mystery involved with it. When in fact, the more that I work with it, the more I'm aware that it actually doesn't have to be the case at all. Another really good example that I've found, again, coming back to the whole concept of minding your feet, is that if you just put your feet on the floor, and if you're in a meeting or you're, you know, again, if you're driving in the car and you're feeling a little bit anxious or a little bit out of the moment, that you can just feeling the weight of the clothing against the skin can be enough. Paying attention, or even paying attention to how you're driving, and paying attention to, you know, your foot on the accelerator and your hands on the wheel. And that also assists us to just come back into the moment, because when we're being still, then the mind has to start to fall still as well. So with your kinesiology, what sort of issues do you find are presenting most frequently now with people who don't know how to be still?
Whether it be from just different patterns. I really find that people who aren't practicing mindfulness and aware of mindfulness really do continue on with that sort of that inner child, like you said earlier, you know, with your, you know, that 3-year-old self, you know, that they're stuck in that you know, that inner child space of not being able to know how to deal with things, even though, you know, often you know, we're grown adults. But because we've actually never really dealt with these issues and we just continue to fall back in the same patterns of behaviour, then ultimately it causes problems and causes issues in our current life. So I suppose it's just about encouraging them to see this, and that shows up in, you know, so many different things, you know, self-confidence, self-belief, you know, just, you know, anger as well. Anger is a big one as well that does come in, anxiety and things like that, because anxiety and depression as well is a lot about not being in the moment and trying to disconnect from the moment and, you know, moving away from the moment because of, you know, heartache or issues and emotional problems. So there's a lot. I do see a few children with anxiety and issues like that, which is always heartbreaking, but it's always, you know, it's just, you know, teaching them the skills of mindfulness and allowing them to calm down and allowing them to see and building them up that they're okay. And also obviously dealing with the family as a whole, because it's not just the child that needs to be, you know, in inverted commas, fixed, because, you know, no one really needs to be fixed. But it's more about dealing with the family as a whole and helping everyone, because ultimately the people that you surround yourself with, whether it be in a family environment or whether it be in the workspace or whether it be, you know, in a social environment, they do affect you and they do rub off on you. So it's seeing that and building them up stronger within themselves. So, yes, I'd probably say anxiety.
I've seen a lot of that occurring, both in the clients that I coach, and also I've been doing some work with a group that are working with children either with behavioural issues or who come from families with some significant behavioural or addiction issues. And yes, they've been working very successfully with that group of little people in teaching them that they don't have to be in the same place as the people that are around them, because, as you say, the influences of people around us can be so debilitating. If you've got somebody who's a naturally positive child striving to bring themselves out of a situation they inherently can sense is not good for them, they can still be dragged back in just by the social norm of how that particular family dynamic runs. And it's very interesting to see how, by teaching them to be in the moment, they can then choose how they'll look at the situation. Now, we're not asking them to say that they don't love mum and dad, but we are asking them to say, well, maybe if mum and dad aren't, for whatever reason, able to feed you right now, it is okay for you to come to school and let somebody know so that school can help with that situation, usually in this particular context by providing the food. And also doing work with very young mums, you know, girls who are 15, 16, who found themselves in that situation, who, again, are getting a feedback from one part of society which says, well, that's wrong, and from another part that says, well, this is how we do life. And giving them the strength and the courage and the resilience again to make choices to continue to study or to get a skill or a trade or to proceed with their lives, understanding that they're also good mums and that they can choose a different way for their child. So it's very powerful the way that it's able to make such an amazing change in life, isn't it, without people needing to do other things other than literally fall still.
Exactly.
So in the next few minutes that we have you got some major tips, or some major tips is the wrong word, but some recommendations for people, first of all for mothers, because I know mums do get very frustrated, and most of Australia is now out of the current round of school holidays. I think New South Wales might still be going through that process. But I do see some very stressed out mums during school holidays. I can relate back to that time when I was a bit the same. How can mums work with their little people, their children, to start teaching and working with mindfulness?
Well, for me, I mean, which is what I live and practice in myself as a mum, role modelling is so powerful for our children, and it's teaching our children, because I mean, like with anybody, you know, I mean, often they're not taught by what you tell them to do; they're taught by what you do, you know, and how you hold yourself and how you behave. And so, by helping yourself through mindfulness and just mentioning it in general conversation, you know, talk about, you know, often I'll talk to my kids, you know, little things, you know. Like when they're getting stressed out or in that moment of anxiety, you know, I'll get them to come back to the present moment, you know, oh, let's have a drink of water. Can you feel that cold water? Can you feel it going down through your throat? You know, bringing them back into their body, or, you know, let's have a bite of an apple and let's feel how we're chewing it and the sweetness and the juice that comes out of the apple, you know, doing those sorts of things and actually verbalizing these things with children, because although they're quite simple everyday things, and even as you said, you know, feeling your feet on the ground, going for a walk in the park and taking your shoes off and feeling the grass on your feet, you know, it just allows them to come back in their body and see that, you know, that them as a person inside, rather than focusing on all of that outside stuff. But for me, the biggest thing is role modelling, and that's what we need to do, because, and I mean, some of our children can be quite young as well, so they're a little bit young to get them to sit down and do a meditation and things like that. So it's teaching them how to use it in everyday life, and, you know, through, you know, just getting them to, you know, take a few deep breaths. Let's stand and let's take a couple of deep breaths. Or, you know, I know my son, he's got a thing, you know, when he gets angry, he comes over and he gives me a hug, because, you know, he thinks that that helps him. And if it, you know, it does often help him, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, sometimes it does. And it's like when he comes over, you know, okay, all right, let's just breathe. So let's just feel that breath going in, you know, and talk to the kids about these things when they're not just in that stressful moment, because often in that stressful moment, things aren't really going in their mind anyway, because they're just in that flight or flight mode. They're not thinking logically. They can't think clearly. They won't remember. So it's saying to them, you know, just every day as you, I mean, I love driving my kids to school and picking them up every day, because I get them in the car for, you know, 20 minutes or so, you know, and just saying, you know, different things, just in general conversation, you know, just, you know, oh, you know, I was taking a few breaths, you know, let's just take a breath, or, you know, just reminding them to do it. And the more that you remind them just in general life to be mindful of their bodies and what's going on inside, rather than on the outside, the more that they practice it and the more that it will come naturally to them when they are away from us and in different stressful situations, or just, you know, at a school, or, you know, wherever they may be, it just becomes ingrained in them then.
I think that's very true, because they're also a little bit more open to understanding what's going on in their bodies than we are. And I know, for example, that there's a group up here in Queensland who are working with children with ADHD, and they've created what they call stress bottles, which are effectively just a drinking bottle, but they fill it up with a lava flow, that bright stuff that they used to use in the lava lamp, and glue the top on. And when the children are feeling agitated, or one of them is acting up, they get the whole class up with their stress bottle, and they all shake it about, literally shake it about, and they put on some music and they shake. And then they're asked to lie down on the floor with their hands their chin cupped into their hands, and they watch the lava settle in the bottle.
Oh, no.
And these children are reporting that they take these home because then when they feel upset at home, that they shake it about and then they go and lie down and watch it settle down. And they're reporting for children that just wouldn't sit still are able to actually really have 3 or 4 minutes of downtime. And 3 or 4 minutes in the life of a child who usually has no ability to retain any form of attention is a major amount of time and a major rest for the brain, if nothing else, I imagine. So it's wonderful stuff that we're to be working in this field. It's really exciting to be working in this field. So would you like to just let our listeners know again how they can go in and get that copy of your sheet of brain exercises? Because I think it's a fantastic gift to our listeners today.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, it's just on my webpage. So it's DBAEROSSI, or one word, .com.au, then the slash, like the forward slash, sorry, brain, BRAIN, then a dash, GYM. And then that will come up with a bit of a landing page, and just pop in your details, and then you'll get an automatic email with the brain exercises. There's 4 of them there, and it's got a little bit of it's got a picture, and it's also got a bit of information on how to actually do it, and then what that brain gym will actually help with. So, you know, even if you can get in the practice, like I said, put it on your fridge and get into the practice of doing it, you know, in the morning brain gym exercises are fantastic because it sets your brain up for success throughout the day, you know, or during breaks throughout the day, just at any time. But the more regularly you can do them, like with anything, then the better that it will the better result you'll have.
Absolutely, and I'm going to pass those tips on to a couple of people that I know who are dealing with chronic pain, because I was really interested in your comments about how it's a way of dealing with pain, because I do notice that with one person in particular who might just happen to be a man, and we won't be saying anything mean about men, but sometimes they do seem to be just a little bit more vocal about their pain, that there seems to be a situation that I've observed where if that person is busy and their mind is focused and really in the moment with what they're doing, then there's no real reference to pain. But if they're bored or they've got time to think about it, shall we say, then the story about this is a chronic pain, it comes from spondylitis, but there is a talking about the pain, and the pain seems to intensify to a point where then it becomes necessary to reach for Panadol. And I'm really curious to test that out with him and see if maybe by refocusing to the moment, that attention to the pain can be reduced. Because, again, I think it's probably even... if I think about a situation where somebody has a headache, you know, there are times that we have a headache and we guess I've got a headache. But if we focus on the headache, it becomes incapacitating. Whereas if there's an acknowledgement that's there and at the same time focus on what else is going on, then that often it's that tension of the focus that seems to make it worse. Now,
exactly.
As a non-medical person, maybe I'm making that's not a correct observation, but that's certainly how it appears to me.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's just, what you focus on is what you get. So if you're focusing on that pain, then that's what you are reminding the brain to do. But when you focus on the breath and you become more calmer and more relaxed about what's going on, then it does seem to dissipate. I mean, yeah, like I said, I'm not medically trained as well, but I have found that it's made a difference for me personally, and it does make a difference with clients that I do talk to them about it.
So tell me, what was the outcome with your daughter? Once you'd managed the dairy out of the diet, and have her headaches been reduced through the combination of kinesiology and mindfulness?
Yep, they have. They have. And, I mean, she's now 14. So, yeah, no, they have helped. First of all, they pretty much stopped after about a month, her headaches, because she was at the point where, you know, because I was giving her Panadol, it was affecting her liver as well. So she would go into, you know, vomiting and things like that because her liver just couldn't cope. So I spent many years after that trying to build up her liver and doing lots of different, there's in kinesiology, there's lots of pressure points and you talk about, you know, emotional patterns and things like that. Even though she was quite mm-hmm. young, I would still, you know, do this. So now she would always, for many years, she would just get a headache when she would eat dairy. So if she went to a party or, you know, we pretty much became dairy free for her at home in everything that I made. But, you know, if she'd go to a party and have an ice cream cake or, you know, have some lollies or, you know, chocolate or whatever, then she would more than likely get a headache. But now at this stage where she is in her life, she can actually now start to tolerate dairy. And so she can have an ice cream, or she can have, you know, some cheese, or she can have, you know, a hot chocolate, you know, at the shop or something with full dairy, and she won't actually get a headache. So it's actually, it's showing me that, you know, her liver and her body is now functioning much better through all the work that we've been doing on her and just building her up, yeah, to be able to tolerate it, which is really good. I'm really happy with that.
Well, it's a remarkable achievement and the sign of a very caring mum to have persevered through that process as well.
When they're in pain, you do whatever you can do.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yep. So to come to our conclusion, because we will be coming to a conclusion fairly soon, the time seems to have absolutely flown, Debbie. So there's so many interesting avenues to explore once we get into the combinations of a couple of modalities like this. I think that it's for me, I find it really fascinating to be able to explore, you know, where we can go with these. What would you like to say to recap on our time together as your key learnings from your experience with you know, a combination of kinesiology and mindfulness, but the way that we have been able to use and bring mindfulness into your life and into the life of your clients?
I suppose that the biggest thing that I think is just breathing, just focusing on the breath, you know, so you're not getting caught up in the emotional side of, because like we said earlier, you know, when you're in that emotion, you have so many examples from the past to justify what you're feeling, and sometimes we tend to go into that victim mode or that inner child mode, you know, when we're stuck in that emotion. But when we can just take a moment out, and this is one of the biggest things that I say, you don't have to do it, you can be wherever you are, you can be in the moment of, you know, having a meltdown or whatever, you can, wherever, you know, just breathe, just take a moment just to breathe and feel the breath going in and feel the breath coming out. You know, the first time you do it, you probably quite a short breath, but just do, you know, two or three breaths just to almost short circuit that emotion or that stressful moment or the anxiety that you're feeling or the anger, just to short circuit it to actually bring you into the moment, which is just so powerful. And then once, you know, it just takes a step. And what I say to, you know, all of my clients and my kids and myself, you know, is it just takes one step, one choice, just something small, just a breath, you know, and just do that one thing, you know, and then from there you can build on that. So from then, from taking the breath, maybe you then want to maybe get up and go and have a glass of water. You know, maybe from there you may, you know, want to, you know, do a brain exercise, or, you know, start to think, you know, be a little bit more compassionate to yourself, you know, from one step to the next step. So it's not thinking, oh, I've had a meltdown, oh, I'm never going to be able to get back, or look what I've done. It's nothing about that. In that moment, it's just one step, and one step could be that breath, you know, breathe in, breathe out. You know, maybe it may be just bringing your hands together, feeling your hands together, putting your hand on your forehead, one step and then you build on that. And it's just a gradual step by step, just baby steps. You know, don't get caught up in that whole, you know, it's too hard or, you know, whatever. It's just all with ease, one step at a time. And I think that's just so powerful and something that we can just take into consideration in our everyday life and teach our children and our clients, you know, that, you know, one step at a time, one step.
That's a very lovely summary, actually, because that's what it comes down to. It's that one step, and that one step is so simple that I think many people discount it, particularly
yes.
when
yep.
they are feeling stressed or overexcited about something. And I find that it's really particularly good advice for anybody who is dealing with any grieving, because just taking that time to breathe and that time to, you know, as you say, breathe again, have a drink of water, just allowing that opportunity to be kind to oneself means that we're much more able to have the resilience to be there for the person who that we're grieving for or with. And it's something that so many of us, and particularly as women, where we tend to be, you know, compassionate and so caring for others that we can often forget to look after ourselves, that it's really important that we remember to take that time and just take that simple step for ourselves as frequently as we possibly can. So that's a fantastic a reminder for people. So listeners, what I'd like you to do again is if you would like to contact Debbie, it's at www.debbierossi.com.au. So Debbie is based, for our Australian listeners, she's based in Victoria. And for our US and overseas listeners, you can still take the opportunity to connect with Debbie and to take advantage of her lovely offer today. With her Retrain Your Brain exercises. So I really do encourage you to hop onto Debbie's website and make the most of that, because it's a lovely set of exercises to share with us. And from my experience of trying to talk and listen and much on the spot, it's a really good, that very first one is a very good exercise to be using when there's too much going on or there's some agitation going on. So I would encourage you all to make sure that you do follow through on that, because that is a really good place to be. So next week, or next fortnight, we're going to be talking about compassion and using mindfulness in the context of compassion. And compassion is the flip side of fear. So compassion in the sense of being kind to not only ourselves but to others and the way that we deal with others. And I'm hoping to have as our guest a local coach and a man of extraordinary wisdom, Mr. Tim Ball, who doesn't actually work primarily as a coach but does in fact provide a lot of coaching to his community. So I won't tell you more about him, but we're going to step away from the coaching, the coaches talking to the coaches, more to a case of somebody who has had a series of life challenges and had to learn to be very kind to himself, and as a result has then in his own way become a coach. But part of his journey has been through the process again of finding and learning to practice mindfulness on a daily basis. So that's going to be another exciting episode. The other news for everyone is that very soon we will be going to television. And so I'm hoping that you will all be able to see us streaming live before too long. And when we've got ourselves all settled into that, I would like to invite Debbie to come on to another show with me so she can actually show us how to do that exercise.
In real person, that'd be fantastic. Thank you. I'd be honoured to come. Thank you.
That'd be my pleasure. So I'm actually going to going to now say thank you, Debbie, so much for being a fantastic guest on our show. And I'm going to ask everybody out there in listener land to remember to breathe. And also, if you would like to remember to pay attention, so mind your feet. It's been a great time and a great day to have you with us. And so thank you once again, and I look forward to next time. Thanks a lot, Debbie.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.